You're listening to Popstar Conversations, taking you inside with your favourite musical artists.
Chuck and I are sitting here with the former lead vocalist of The Police. Sting, welcome to the show.
Sting, it's such a pleasure to have you here with us.
Okay, I have to ask you, you've done Labyrinth as your last album. Now you're doing If on a Winter's Night. There's like a theme running between these two albums. Are you becoming a modern-day Renaissance man?
I'm 600 years too late, aren't I, really? No, I would not call myself a Renaissance man. I'm a curious man. I'm curious about the future of music, and also I'm curious about the history of music. And I sometimes like to immerse myself in the creative process of another person or another era. Because I feel I can learn something. I feel that's where I seek inspiration now. And I hope that, you know, by interpreting these old songs, that somehow that feeds my own creative process. And so I will take this information and it will become something different in the future. I've no guarantee that will happen. But that is my interest and has been for a number of years, to become an interpreter as well as a creator, to try and do both.
As a solo artist, you've also worked with a variety of other successful artists. Why have you found that necessary?
I'm curious. I'm curious about stuff. I want to learn. I don't mind putting myself in the position of being the student. So teach me something. That's what I'm here for.
You know, the songs on this album, I have to admit, have so much warmth and depth. It's really heartfelt.
I'm grateful that you said that. I love doing this project. Although it began as something slightly different, they said to me, will you do a Christmas album? And I was kind of threw up on the carpet and said, I don't like Christmas that much. But I'll tell you what I do like. I like winter. Winter is the season that I really look forward to, even though it's cold. I like to sit in front of a fire. I like to wrap the blanket around me. I like to imagine stories. And Christmas for me, or the winter anyway, is the season of the imagination. It's a season where the long dark nights somehow inspire stories, ghost stories, or I think religion was born in the winter, you know, ancient pagan religions maybe. And
it reminds me of Dickens with all its myths.
The myths are very interesting. I mean, you don't have to believe they're the truth to get inspired by their the magical stories. I mean, they're wonderful. But I also wanted to juxtapose the Christian stories with pre-Christian ideas of what the winter is. You know, for me, the winter is less about salvation. It's more about regeneration. For us to move into the new season, the new year, we need to reflect in the winter. We need to spend time reflecting on what's happened in the past, ghosts of the past, dealing with what's happened in the past, and then from that point we can move forward. And this is what we've done for thousands of years as Europeans. The winter is very important to us psychologically, certainly to me.
When you were making this record, why did you select songs that went back as early as the 1500s instead of the ones, you know, from the 40s and the 50s that we're familiar with?
Frosty the Snowman, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Santa Claus is Coming to Town. I think all of those gods have been emasculated. You know, they're old pagan gods, but they've totally had their balls chopped off. And so I avoided them like the plague. I did a lot of research of existing songs about the winter, and threw a lot of things away, and then honed in on songs that seemed not so well known or had that sense of mystery about them, that sense of danger. Lullabies are interesting. Lullabies are always dual purpose. They soothe you, they soothe the child, and then they scare the shit out of the child, because the imagery is terrifying. So I was trying to figure out what that is. You know, you're saying to the child, you're safe here in the cradle and everything's nice, but if you go outside there, they'll kill you. And also, I think to name an evil is to have some power over it, or to lessen the power of the evil. It's like the old fairy tale, Rumpelstiltskin. If you name him, then he has no power. So you name what's evil to the child. It's a strange psychology, though. But they're all the same. All lullabies have this dual purpose.
One of the songs that you recorded, Christmas at Sea, the poem by Robert Louis Stevenson. What was it about that poem that you wanted to record it?
I've always loved that poem from being a child. I was always very moved by that poem, and it's about the gravitational pull of Christmas, or the family at Christmas. You want to be with your family, they want to be together. Also aware that people without families find Christmas a very difficult time. It's a very dark and depressing and frightening time in many ways. So I addressed that, and then one of the ladies who played with me, Mary McMasters, plays the Celtic harp, and she was singing a song from the Isle of Skye in Gaelic, which is it's a woman's working song. So I thought that's a perfect setting for Robert Louis Stevenson's sailor. You know, he's being dragged home emotionally, and yet he's on the sea, and it's this incredible tension. So that song was created during the process. You know, we found it as we explored. So it was nice.
Like one of the other songs that you recorded, Gabriel's Message, it's another song from the 15th century. I mean, you must have done a lot of research to find them.
Well, it was important to acknowledge the Winterreiser, because that's a model for what I was trying to do. So I referenced it. I translated the German as best I could. And it's a simple song to do. But it was my acknowledgement and my hopefully my reverence for Schubert and that particular work.
From what I understand, you're not a very religious person, but why are you fascinated by the imagery used by the church?
I'm essentially agnostic. At the same time, I'm aware that religion, like literature, like art, like music, is a product of the imagination, the human imagination. So I would not throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think, you know, religion is important. Do I accept a lot of things as articles of faith? No, I don't. But the power of the stories is very important. And so they're magical stories, you know, and magical birth is a commonplace in the history of religion. All gods were born magically. They weren't born normally. Mithras, Shiva, Dionysus, all Buddha, all born in this strange way. So it's not unusual. But they're magical stories. Just as, you know, Brothers Grimm, fairy tale. Doesn't make them silly. They're powerful.
And since these are holiday songs, it seems that you'll have a very limited time to perform them.
You know, there's only a small window you can perform these songs in, from November to March. So I know we're playing Durham Cathedral near Newcastle, and then we're doing St. John the Divine in New York. We're looking for a date in Germany, one in France, and one in Italy. I like playing in churches. I think churches would be interesting.
So after all, do you celebrate a secular Christmas?
My wife loves Christmas. She is very traditional about, you know, the children coming home and the turkey and all of that stuff and the presents. I'm ambivalent about it, but I'll go along with it. And we have a good time. My own memory of Christmas is not particularly happy. Christmas is always a time of tension and, you know, strange, happy, and then, you know, fighting. So I've, you know, I remember those times too.
Sting, can you tell us a little bit about your two farms? You have one in UK and one in Italy. They're quite substantial.
I've owned a farm in England for almost 20 years, and in Italy for 12. I have two farms. We grow our own food, basically. And it's a very, very expensive way of eating organically. But it's we eat well. And in Italy, we have a wine which for the first time in the last 3 years has become really good. We started to farm based on the philosophy of Rudolf Steiner. It's called biodynamics. It's kind of strange, kind of voodoo, you know, you buy the phases of the moon, but it works. The wine tastes delicious, and we're going to sell it. I mean, we won't make any money out of it. It would probably help to pay the farmers who do the work.
And what's the name of your wine?
It's called Sister Moon, after one of my songs. We have quite a few bottles. If we don't drink them all, we like wine. We do olive oil, we do jam, honey. We have our own colony of bees, a lot of bees, about 50 families of bees, who are working very hard even now. It's a very nice way to live. I pick the olives myself and the grapes. I like physical work. Enjoy mindless picking olives. It's no thinking, just.
Now that you're recording in so many different areas, do you think you'll ever do another pop album?
You know, I've no real idea of what I will do next. I know I will make music. And I don't think anything you do in music, if you do it with integrity, is ever wasted. It always goes into an emotional bank somewhere, or a bank of technique, or you learn something. So the only thing I would have an ambition to do is make progress as a musician, as a creative artist. So that's all I need to do, just make progress. It doesn't have to be hugely successful. I'm not terribly ambitious, except to make progress. That's my only concern. I think there's some progress on this record, vocally. I think there's some interesting developments, particularly in the lower end of my voice, exploring that darker, you know, those notes below middle C. I sound like my father or my grandfather. I still have the high end, but nice to explore that dark sort of baritone.
It seems to me that you've adjusted your voice technique and the enunciation. It seems to be very different than what you do on your pop albums.
Yes, it is, but I'm sure that work will be reflected in a pop album at some point. I don't want to stay the same. I don't want to tread water. I want to always move on.
I wanted to ask you about your daughter, Coco. She's a singer and a songwriter. Have you ever recorded anything with her?
Not for a long time. You know, I used to play, and she would sit on my knee, and we'd sing songs together, but she doesn't need me anymore. She's a singer-songwriter. Her grasp of powerful and complex emotions is very, very striking, and her way of singing and constructing songs is surprisingly sophisticated, and you know, I recognize some of it as my DNA, but some of it I have no idea where it's come from. It's quite something. But she played me some songs the other day, and I literally just teared up. I'm tearing up now as I think about it.
Sting, again, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Sting, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you again for listening to Popstar Conversations. Be sure to click the subscribe button below and hit the red bell so that you'll be notified of our next exclusive interview.
Thank you for listening to Popstar Conversations. Please join us again for another conversation with your favorite musical artist.